Hello, friends. Welcome back to Destructo Discourse Good Time. This is a Dragon Ball GT Rewatch podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and joining me on the Discourse this week is Dave.
Hello.
And Matt.
I'm the result of you wishing for a nice pair of slacks.
It's such a good gimmick. We should have set that one up beforehand. All right.
You still have...
Yeah. Carry on.
You want to go back?
No, it's ruined.
And I'm also joined by Melissa.
Where's my juice?
And Theo.
Digging the hole.
So we didn't have a gimmick, but I still feel like I dropped the ball.
It's always hard being the first one.
Yeah.
You set up the ball. You launched the ball in the air for us to... Kick.
You serve.
The ball is going to crack from us doing so many gimmicks.
But I myself was the ball, so this is only so much of a comfort.
The ball is essential, though. There is no game without ball.
You're not wrong. This sounds like a fable, like a morality tale, and or something. About the importance of balls. Let's think about what show we're talking about. See, you know.
If you haven't already been able to tell, this is an anime rewatch podcast where we discuss a very cohesive story called Dragon Ball GT.
This is a rewatch podcast where we struggle desperately to find something to talk about.
We're kicking off the Shadow Dragon saga, which is the final saga of GT. Mm-hmm. And we are hunting down those Dragon Balls. Dun 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 dun. But apropos of nothing, I do have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Can y'all give me your favorite monsters of the week? This could be any. This could be like live action, like a Buffy situation, anime, whatever, wherever your heart tells you.
I mean, I feel like this is a basic answer, but Supernatural was my first. Like real monster of the week, and it has a place in my heart.
Any specific standouts?
Yeah, I've never seen Supernatural.
Ooh,
is it like monsters, like movie monster style stuff, like vampires?
Oh, yeah.
It's like monster hunting in the Midwest or something like that. Isn't that what
the
it
first
is?
Season is very urban legend kind of monsters.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's fun. Mm-hmm.
And then it gets into more like mythology and. Demons and all kinds of goofy stuff. And I actually need to like go back and finish watching it. I never saw the end. I stopped watching around when the monsters from Purgatory started coming. The big mouth, they were very hungry monsters.
I mean, I would be
hungry boys.
There was one named Dick, and they had a lot of fun with. Calling him a dick.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I get it.
You're legally obligated at that point. there's only one conceivable answer for me, which is the Dopants from Kamen Rider W, which is, you know, they have little, like, magical flash drives that are also drugs, and they plug them into their skin and they get superpowers and turn into monsters. And it's very quickly established that these things can do fucking anything. And one of the very first ones is they find a man who looks exactly like Count Olaf from a series of unfortunate events.
Oh, yeah. I remember this one.
Wow. Whose transformation trinket is money.
The
and when
money
he plugs
dope
it into
man.
Himself, he turns into like a huge, fat monster made of gold.
He's got like a dump truck ass, but it's like made of like coin purses.
Yes, and he can suck people's souls out if they lose games of chance to him, and turn them into coins. And he can also shoot volleys of exploding coins out of his belly. That's just a thing. This is like episode 4. Like that, the show it only gets weirder from there. But that's the one I will never forget. magic pocket dimension casino soul stealing Count Olaf.
I love the money dough pan.
Yes.
Oh, there was like there's a desserts one that I love.
Yeah, there's a desserts one. There's the one whose body is just made of guns.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
There's one whose just name is just violence.
Yeah, I think that's the one I'm thinking of, actually.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna follow that Kamen Rider route because I am the father werewolf that gave Dave his lycanthropy for Kamen Rider. That's a weird metaphor.
Hey, man. Just got done playing World of Darkness, no judgment.
So a couple seasons later, there's Kamen Rider Forze, which is space-themed.
Yes.
NASA. It was themed around, like, the 50-year anniversary of, like, Yuri Gagarin spaceflight or something. Mm-hmm. And the 40th anniversary of Kamen Rider existing, because Forze is, like, 4-0, right? So, I tell you that to tell you this. All the bosses are, like, space-themed. Everything is space. The big bad bosses, like the lieutenant-grade guys, are all Zodiac people, called the Horoscopes.
Yep.
Hmm. And every monster of the week is based on a constellation, of which there are a lot of itty-bitty ones that you can base monsters off of.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called the Zodiarts. Fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And they all have various powers based on whatever their constellation is. Like Cygnus is the swan, there's like a chameleon who can go invisible, stuff like that. And I love theming like that. I'm all about themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't matter what they are as long as there's themes.
Mm-hmm.
No, Forze is wonderful.
For me, I would say they're not necessarily monsters per se, but I really love the segment of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 3 where each episode they fight a new villain who is based or inspired by horror movie monsters. Like, Yellow Temperance is based on the Blob.
Nice.
There's a little baby that invades your dreams who is based off Nightmare on Elm Street. There's a doll that tries to kill people. It's based off Chucky.
Child's Play. Duh. Oh my god.
that's my favorite segment of Part 3. I really like that stuff.
I mean, I was too hung up on the naming convention that was based off of tarot cards. I'm like, ooh, that's cool. So there's this one. But I wasn't paying attention.
You didn't realize there was another layer.
There's a second layer. Oh, it's like an onion.
And then on top of that, there's the music references. It's great.
I mean, you know, I'm just gonna say Sailor Moon, right? Like,
I mean,
there's no shame of any kind in that.
I honestly
would have been disappointed otherwise.
Yeah, no judgment.
I've only seen a few episodes of Sailor Moon, and all the monsters of the week were fucking standout. Even just like a few of them.
It's so hard. You can't.
The only reason I didn't say Sailor Moon is because I wanted you to have that on.
I mean,
yeah, and like, how do you narrow them down?
We respect that it's her jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Every list that you can find of like the top 10 Sailor Moon monsters of the week are different. They go from, I mean, episode one is terrifying. It's this, like, monster, and she looks terrifying, and she turns her head 180 degrees on her neck, and...
Classic.
And it's terrifying. And then, like, you have a monster that's this, like, elephant vacuum.
All right.
And then... If those who were there for my our dream state Sailor Moon podcast episode, there's a boxing kangaroo.
Mm-hmm.
There's
I remember it fondly.
Yes, I do know the boxing kangaroo.
There's a woman whose torso is a sneaker. There's one that just looks like a dude bought like a Pegasus costume from a costume store, and it's really weird.
I can't lie to you, I was not ready for the sneaker thing.
I forgot about the sneaker.
There's a ball. There's a monster that's a ball in season 4 and she suffocates people. Like, she lands on your face and suffocates you.
Yeah.
And has the most bishojo looking cute face.
This is amazing. I love this beach ball.
For those listening, a picture of the ball has entered the group chat, and I'm losing my actual mind.
Literally copy and paste 90s anime eyes from your brain onto a
None of these are what I was envisioning from your descriptions.
The other ones have entered the chat.
They're much stupider than I could have believed. Like, my brain couldn't conceive of it. I'm so happy.
I'm upset with the sneaker one because of the stripes on the side, because it's a combination, like, I may be a sneaker monster, but I also have a weekend shift at, like, the Lady Foot Locker.
Yeah.
Yeah, this isn't a monster. This is just fashion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see that with quite a few anime villains, honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrifying,
And then that last one is from the very first episode, where they're like, yo, not fucking around.
Yep, I remember that.
Well, that was that girl's mom, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, it is a wild ride to week. There's one that's a monkey. Oh, the monkey. I love the monkey. She's amazing.
The monster design in Sailor Moon has never taken a foot off the gas for an instant. Full to the floor.
And we love that about Kamen Rider 2, but Sailor Moon has this element of just being wholly unhinged 100% of the time that I'm not sure even Kamen Rider can compete with. And I respect that so much.
There's a monkey, the last one I'll talk about, there's a monkey from season 4 who gets created and immediately tells her creator to fuck off.
Makes sense.
And spends all of her time, she's a mimic. Ooh. And she both audio and then transforms her head into the character that she is being, and she is a delight.
Oh, I remember her, and she would her idea is like she would do all your attacks against you.
Yeah. God. Yeah.
And I remember the dub version of that, like, had her saying, like, you know, Jupiter, Thunder, etc., but, like, in her chirpy monkey voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very powerful.
Yeah.
I want to give an honorable mention to the Devilman series. I won't really go into them too much, but if you've seen Devilman Crybaby, you've seen kind of a best of the best of what kind of monsters of the weeks were in the classic series.
I'm familiar.
Jinmen being my personal favorite, the turtle who wears the faces of his victims and his shell.
Oh yeah. Oh god, yeah. That's off the chain.
And the twist that one of his victims was Akira's parents.
Yeah, and so you have to go through them to stop him. It's some real shit.
It's some fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Good time for the whole family.
The realest stuff. Watch Devilman Crybaby if you're old enough to, and make sure your windows are closed. Like
and
mine
your, and your shades are drawn and your internet search history is cleared.
There's
be sure you're in a good mental space.
Yeah.
True.
Honestly.
I've fallen into a similar trap with Food Wars. I was interested in watching Food Wars. And told me
episode 1.
I thought it was just gonna be a fun Iron Chef brawl cooking show with cool anime steaks. Oh. It is very proudly horny. I had windows open and everything.
Horny on Maine.
In front. And here I am on my couch watching someone do an ahegao to mashed potatoes in front of God on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like 5 minutes in.
That sounds. Oh boy. Sounds like Japan.
Yeah.
Before we get into our episodes proper, I did want to make a quick pit stop to the Hyperbolic Rhyme Chamber. We have no official fan submissions this week, but I did manage to whip myself up a little san haiku for you.
Oh.
Oracle serene, torrents of gleaming fish fall on the foggy morn.
Yeah, I mean, that's more descriptive than most episode titles in this series. So, yeah.
Yeah, I might have just done an episode title, really.
Yeah, you know. Save yourself.
That's what for a second, I thought that's what I was hearing.
Yeah. You're saving yourself some work.
And if you, too, would like to submit some of your own Dragon Ball-related poetry, please do so at destructodiscourse@gmail.com. And if you would include some name and pronouns that we can refer to you by, that would be... oh, so delightful. I don't know what that was. That's nothing. So are you folks ready to hunt some dragons?
Oh, yeah.
Some dragons?
Sounds good. Does that happen in these episodes?
Technically.
Once per episode.
Apparently.
They're going to... stay the fuck tuned. They're going to knock these out real quick.
Yeah.
We went with the Monster of the Week gag for a reason, because they have abandoned the Dragon Ball Z feeling that they had.
Not sure
going.
If we even get a whole week out of any of these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Monster of the... a couple days.
Yeah.
Episode 50, The Five-Star Dragon.
The Japanese title roughly translates to Down Goes Saiya Power? Electro Dragon Woozing Long.
Okay.
We are back on the hunt for the other six dragons after we have defeated Haze Shenron.
That guy.
We opened up with the most dragon-like dragon, according to the wiki.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see. We open up with Goku enjoying some fresh lake water, and Pan does not want any.
Mm-mm. Goku doesn't want to drink from the same place a horse done drank.
Mm-hmm. Goku is drinking from the river like a horse.
He is just dunking his whole head.
Yeah, but Pan drinks.
He knows where he came from.
Pan drinks Perrier back at home.
I only drank Voss water.
Pan wants to go on ahead and gather the rest of the Dragon Balls. And we also get a random... okay, so we get a cutaway that never comes back up in the rest of these episodes. We get a random cutaway of the San ladies and Bulma and Bulla just having a coffee break at Capsule Corps.
It's wife talk time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because 18 and Marin are there, too.
Yeah. It's just, for no reason, it's just like the Real Housewives of Dragon World. Kind of just staring out a window and going like,
show.
We gotta trust Goku. Though,
I would much rather watch that show than what we're dealing with now.
Gira detects the next Dragon Ball in a town just beyond a mountain range as they fly over the countryside.
Wait, can we back up
just
real quick?
Just beyond the mountain range.
Absolutely.
First, we get some Saiyan math when they're figuring out how many dragons they have left.
Oh, I completely skipped this. Yes. Tell us the Saiyan math.
Okay, so there's 7 Dragon Balls.
Yeah.
And we got 1.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves 1, 2, 3, 4.
You got it. Yeah.
6.
Yeah.
6 Dragon Balls left.
Goku does this like whole elaborate thing, and then like pan claps at the end, like, good for you.
She tells him he did his studies.
I like that Goku apparently has these, like, very specific internal criteria for his odds of success. It's like, you know, as long as it's only that many dragons, yeah, we can do it. No problem.
Six and a half.
Only that many,
get
and one
here.
At a time.
Yeah, then we'd be in huge trouble.
They also logic out some exposition, saying that, oh, when we beat Haze Dragon, it purified the Dragon Ball. So if we beat them all, then we solve the problem.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
That does make intuitive sense, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Pattern,
maybe.
A pattern of one has been recognized.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need one data point.
If Bulma was here, she would probably have a different attitude towards this science.
Pan is super thirsty and demands they stop in town for some refreshments, but the town is eerie and abandoned.
There's a sign on the street that says, Coffee Move?
I missed that.
I put that down because I stared at it for like 5 minutes.
I love a fresh coffee move.
Very, very fair.
Don't ever get the espresso there.
Pan finds a vending machine, but it unfortunately eats her zenny and dispenses no lemonade. Instead, it dispenses purple slime with electric staticky sparks coming off of it.
Oh,
speaking
no.
of the blob,
Goku
horror movie, The Blob.
Evil has corrupted the sport drink.
Oh no!
what is no longer
less filling or tastes great.
Yeah. A nightmare.
It's more filling and tastes bad.
Now it's just electric goop.
When the drink doesn't come out, the read of Pan saying, "Where's my juice?" is very cute.
It's very good.
It's very cute.
I put a coin in. Where's my juice?
I demand to be served.
Yeah, this is, you know, this is the social contract.
Let me speak to your manager.
This gave me some flashbacks. I saw The Blob probably when I was too young to. Okay. Not the old Blob, but like, I think the 80s or 90s remake of The Blob.
Oh.
Do you remember that one? Did you ever see that?
I did not see it.
There's a bit where a man gets yanked down the drain of a sink.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, fun. Mm.
And it stuck with me for longer than it should have.
Right.
Yeah, great practical effects they had in back then in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
I would say very good.
Bang,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah.
Baby. So Pan is noticing this purple slime is appearing everywhere, clinging to like lampposts and like stoplights and stuff, and she is visibly disgusted.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
It was a good, believable disgust. I too felt disgusted from her disgust.
Mm-hmm.
This random sweet old couple explain that they show up and explain that this slime is showing up all over town and it's sucking up all the electricity, all the energy in town.
Hmm. Okay. We're here to give you exposition. Okay, bye.
Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Exposition.
And juice.
All right.
We're here to raid all the homes that have been abandoned.
Yeah.
I want them to just be the like, sweetest, nicest marauders. Like, they offer Pan like a nice can of juice.
Okay, so this was my second dive down a rabbit hole.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Because I said, oh, what does that can say? And it...
Oh, yeah.
It says oolong water. It doesn't say oolong tea. It says oolong water.
This sounds
I don't like those implications.
This sounds like a part of Hail Satan that we never got to.
I don't like those implications
and
at all.
I like if it said oolong tea, like I get that. But I like went on a Google deep dive trying to figure out if there was some terminology of like a tea water, like, but you can't have tea flavored water because that's just tea.
That's tea.
So,
is it maybe like a character that's like used on like iced tea cans or soda cans or something?
I couldn't find any actual product that used this type of writing. So I am genuinely interested. Like, the only time ever that someone on a podcast will say, no, actually, at me. Uh-huh. Like, this is gonna haunt me. Of...
You, yeah.
What is oolong water? I need to know.
I'm keeping my mind firmly focused on the tea and not the character named Oolong, because the implications I am not here to talk about.
For sure. Maybe it's just a brand. Like,
I mean, that's we could only want. That's part of the terrifying implications to me. That was the first thing I thought of.
Like,
ice cold ham water.
I wouldn't trust any product from a shapeshifter, let's be honest. Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. I don't know. I spent most
it's
of this show...
It's full of GMOs!
Well, I spent most of the show not knowing that he was a shapeshifter, and I wouldn't trust anything that he made, just in general.
Fair, yeah.
Like, that's not... That has nothing to do with the problem.
Yeah, shapeshifter aside, don't trust anything from Oolong specifically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the record, the characters... The kanji characters for Oolong are Crow Dragon, which is seems kind of cool to me.
It's much too metal for him. Cool. Like that's a huge problem.
That whips.
But I don't know.
Like that's just a carryover from when he was supposed to be scary for all of like 0.2 seconds.
So Giru starts lighting up that a Dragon Ball is rapidly approaching. And before we know it, we meet this weird, kind of kaiju kappa-looking guy. This bipedal, with like sort of a beaked mouth, and he's like, "Ah, you must be after the Dragon Ball." His name is Rage Shenron, the Electricity Dragon.
He kind of looks like they mashed like the little like the pterodactyls you see in Dragon World with Jiren from the first world tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's got the 5-star ball embedded in his tummy.
And he looks huge!
Due to some very good camera work, we don't know how big he is until him and Goku are in the same shot, and he is, in fact, small.
He's tiny.
Rage says, "I summon the electric slime." And he summons all the goo to latch onto Goku and Pan, and the Rage laughs because Goku has nothing to punch, no face, no stomach, no limbs, it's just goo.
Oh no.
And then he immediately abandons this great plan to make a body of the goo.
Mm-hmm. He does electric slime body build. I'm so glad we're getting named attacks from these freaks.
That's one redeeming factor to this, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I misunderstood what was happening here. I thought he was absorbing it to become large.
Yeah, I thought so originally, because he appears to be a very just big Rage. But this is more like, as we are quick to find out, this is more like a slime mecha.
Mm-hmm.
In the shape of Rage Shenron, because the slime mecha doesn't move its mouth when Rage talks, and we see shots of Rage in the, like, fake belly Dragon Ball on the big Rage, as if it were a cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit, okay. I said Jiren, I meant to say Giren.
That's fair.
I wanted the guy from the first martial arts tournament, not the guy from the last martial arts tournament.
Yeah, the very last one.
It's easy to get them confused.
They're one letter different, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rage reveals that he was created from the wish that brought Goku back to life to fight the Saiyans Nappa and Vegeta. And for some reason in the dub, Rage also implies that Goku was responsible for this. And anyway, it's like, oh, you were so scared of the Saiyans, you used the Dragon Balls to come back to life, and it's like, bro, he was dead. He was on Monkey Chase Planet.
This is a weird one. Like,
It felt like an expansive you.
Very.
Like you humans. It,
The royal, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it feels like they're going out of their way to not mention Raditz. the one responsible for Goku being dead.
Yep.
It's just a conspiracy.
He just happened to be dead.
Goku even calls this dragon like a brother to him.
I wish I had a brother, but if I did, he'd be something like you.
What did Raditz do to the writers of this? That they have set out on this mission, this purpose from which they cannot be turned to just eradicate any trace of his existence.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there was a wish made on the Dragon Balls.
Oh my god. Oh, fan fiction preface. What happened to
the final dragon?
Can you imagine the long game?
Jesus.
The final dragon was. Wouldn't that be such a GT thing to happen too, honestly? Like, for Raditz to finally be relevant again, but here in the stupidest way possible.
They brought back the Tuffles.
I'm shocked that, I mean, I assume that's not what happens. But if it were to happen, I would be shocked for about 3 seconds, and then I would be like, oh, of course. Of course.
Yes.
So Rage sends Zappy after Zappy at Goku, but he dodges it.
Eradicate Raditz from canon. Alright. What crime did he commit?
Toriyama himself made a wish on the Dragon Balls.
Yeah.
Can the Dragon Balls themselves break the fourth wall?
Ooh.
Mm.
Can the Dragon Balls
themselves?
This is all going under the same heading. Like, these are, you know, sub bullet points.
Bullet points.
Excellent. This has been a very productive episode.
Goku finally manages to land some hits in, but it doesn't really work. His fists sink into Rage like a big jelly, and he gets zapped. Oops.
Because he's still just goo.
Pan launches a beam. Rage does not care. Goku gets launched through a window, and then he comes out as a Super Saiyan 4.
So, yeah, I blinked. I looked away for a split second, and then he was an adult man.
Yep. He's just kind of going to do that now.
You don't need a holler or anything. He just does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the same thing happens again in a bit. I blinked. I looked away for a second, then he was a boy again. I'm just like, what the fuck?
See, when you splash him with hot water, he turns into an adult man. If you splash him with cold water...
Uh-huh. Splash him with cold water, he becomes Ranma Sautome.
I don't get it.
You'll get it when we do the Ranma podcast. It's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Ooh. Is that foreshadowing?
No, I don't see that.
That's
happening.
A threat.
Yeah.
I see. It's perpetually interesting. I know absolutely nothing about Ranma other than the most basic premise, but the breadth of the reactions I get to it from different people that I know never ceases to fascinate me. Like, there's people who will die for it, and there's people who react like that. Which I always just find
like,
really interesting.
Serious answer, Ranma is a very fun and charming series that goes nowhere.
I see.
Cool. I mean, what are we doing right now?
Well, the fun and charming part, I think, is the issue there.
Yeah.
At least at this point in the show.
So, Super Saiyan 4, Goku is now immune to Zappies. He charges up a big beam, big Kamehameha, and blasts Rage right in the tummy. However, he absorbs it and bounces it back at the team.
Oh no.
Oh man.
Our heroes emerge from the rubble. Rage is a little concerned about this.
Am I the only one that honestly hates that his Kamehameha turns red in Super Saiyan 4? That bugs me.
It does do that a lot, and it feels meh to me. They're supposed to be blue. That's the color of heroes.
I can.
It doesn't change color in for anybody else or in any other form.
I would,
except for four.
I mean the obvious conclusion to draw, like intuitively, is that you know it's because the nature of his key is different. Which would be really cool if they had, like, ever committed to the idea that, like, transforming into these different states is, like, mentally or spiritually dangerous, which was kind of the implication way back in Super Saiyan 1.
Right.
But it never goes
They do fairly establish that rules change for Super Saiyan 4.
Yes.
Like, obviously because he becomes a grown man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rage sends out little slime tendrils that tap into, like, hydroelectric dams and generators and wind farms, and he grows even bigger! Definitely in the wrong way.
Oh, yeah.
The wrongest way. Pan launches a bunch of blasts, they get bounced back. More tendrils. The city keeps going into, like, blackouts as Rage continues to grow into a big blob kaiju. And Goku and Pan get cocooned in goo.
I'm confused by how the goo works.
Yeah.
It seems like at first it seemed like it was like absorbing the energy, but now it's like converting the energy into mass.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna get some more confusion, you know, in the inevitable defeat.
Yep.
Which we'll get to.
I like that when Theo complains about, like, the science or the physics in this show not making sense, it carries real weight.
Like, it's... I don't mind if the physics doesn't make sense. Like, it's... I'm not the kind of nerd that's, like... I mean, I'm a big nerd, but, like, not the kind that's, like, you got the equations wrong. That's not how science works. It's just, I want it to be internally consistent.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
We can suspend disbelief for functional, like...
World building.
For functionality, yeah. But not for inconsistency, no.
But also, you have moved heaven and earth, Theo, to make parts of this show make sense that no one ever imagined could kind of make sense.
This is true.
And so, like, again, like, something that even you cannot redeem... I think that has weight to it, personally.
Oh. Shucks.
Rage emerges from the big rage to basically just to mock Goku and Pan and to zap the hell out of them.
He zaps them up to 50%!
Oh, at 50% snap. Voltage! Yeah. Pan passes out when Rage ups the voltage and Goku eventually blacks out as well. But to the rescue, what's that? It's Mother Nature. A rainstorm rolls in, and Rage freaks out as the goo mech starts to spark in short circuit with each raindrop.
Okay, what circuits, though? He's a pile of goo!
The internal membranous invisible slime circuits.
And it's also...
Have you seen Pokemon? Electricity and water. Yeah.
Electricity's strong against water. The rain should lose this fight.
See what I mean? Even in Pokemon science, it can't be saved.
It's so stupid. I hate this episode, honestly.
Because also, the goo is sentient, I guess?
Yeah, the goo's, like, freaking out and trying to find cover, but, like, it's kind of
he's telling
little...
it to leave.
Yeah.
He's yelling at the goo to leave.
Get out of here, boys! Cheese it! The cops! Like... The water cops!
I'm just so frustrated, because it's just like, why were we even here? Why did this even happen?
Yeah, they could have
Goku
found
with
a
Super Saiyan 4, but
where did it
the
all...
monster lost to the rain.
Where did it all go so wrong?
I do like the idea, if we're keeping to the concept of like the Blob and like 50s and like kaiju. I do love the idea of like, it was simple rainwater t'was killed the monster.
Yeah, they were going for like a War of the Worlds. It was nature slayed the beast.
Right. The humble oxygen. All the sparky explosions chained together into a massive flash of light, and Rage Shenron is reduced to a smoldering heap.
And then he congratulates them on defeating him.
He's like, yeah, he does like a whole like, you've earned the 5-star ball. You have defeated me.
Trying to act like he still has any like dignity here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But as Pan goes to pick up the ball, a surprise wave of slime erupts from under the rubble. Good thing Goku's here launch a massive
Kamehameha. I pulled a Majin Buu. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Goku has time to yell at Pan, get out of there quickly, Pan, do it now! And Pan can get out of there in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if it was really that urgent, Pan.
Goo is slow.
It seems like they had plenty of time to get out of there.
Just the nature of
goo. Rage is blasted into many a smithereen, and we are left with the 5-star, all healed and orange. Good job, everyone.
Ooh, thanks, I guess. Five.
Yeah.
We did it?
We end the episode with Gura reuniting with Goku and Pan as the camera looks out to a over the sunset, and we see a sinister-looking silhouette, perhaps, of Shenron's yet to come.
Mmm.
Any final thoughts on episode 50?
I did love the narrator's intro for this one. This is the phrase, "Hey, Shenron wasted no time flexing his putrid muscles." And also the Raid Shenron did remind me of Ghidorah, which is another like small bit of solace.
Oh yeah,
small bit of solace to find in this nonsense. I feel so bad for anyone who actually likes GT. Like, I hope they've stopped listening at this point, but.
No, keep listening.
No, don't sit around and listen to us shit on something you like. But
oh, that's
no,
fair.
I've talked to several people that do enjoy GT, and 9 times out of 10, they accept that it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like no, we don't think it's good. It's just
you can like things we that like are bad.
It's
like Hades Town. It's a sad song, but we sing it anyway.
Y'all, I will die for the movie Gone in 60 Seconds. Is it a good movie?
Yeah.
No, but I fucking love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's more often than not, they'll be like, yeah, it's bad, but Super Saiyan 4 is cool looking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Therefore,
fair.
I
That's
like
fair.
GT.
That's fair.
In spite of the way that it is.
I love you in spite of the person that you are.
I did have one quick thing.
Yes.
The side shot of Videl, where the ladies
mm-hmm.
back at home.
The ladies who launch.
Yeah. I think in the English they say something about something about trusting Goku or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The Japanese version, Videl says that Pan is going to get punished when she gets back because she's always running off.
Oh, shit.
Oh, oh no.
Like, Pan did not ask to go on this field trip.
God.
No permission slip signed whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Episode 51 is the 6-star dragon. Are we seeing a pattern here?
The Japanese title roughly translates to Liu Xing Long, find the big tornado attack's weak point.
Well, yeah, again, accurate. Fair enough.
We open up this episode on a deserted fishing town. I noted that this looks like a One Piece village.
It does!
Yeah.
It's got boats.
Yeah.
And boats. And a sign that says Fisherman.
Yeah, it's just there's a random Welsh fishing town in the middle of Dragon World.
There's a tiny part of me that was thinking Innsmouth here.
Yeah.
I can see that, yeah.
That's much too cool for Dragon Ball GT, which is also a bad sign. But yeah.
Giru is sure that he detects a Dragon Ball somewhere around here, but he is unable to keep up the radar signal because he's hungry. His battery's too low.
Aww.
It's a metal. And Pan is frustrated. She's arguing about it. And out of nowhere, a random octopus falls from the sky and lands on her head.
Poor Pan.
She is freaked out about this, and good news, Pan, because you're about to get a lot more. A torrential downpour of fish just pummels the earth.
This is a lot.
And it is at this point that I would like to talk to you folks about a phenomenon called the lluvia de peces, which is an actual, I guess, weather pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a thing that can happen.
Yeah, it occurs, it occurs regularly in a town, in a part of Honduras called Yoro, where fish fall from the sky. It's also called the aguacero de pescado, downpour of fish.
It happens after tornadoes, right?
Yeah, water spouts suck the fish
water
up.
Water spouts, yes.
This happens regularly?
Yes, it does. Enough to have its own Wikipedia page.
That's so wild.
I know. What a magical world, yeah. Right?
In a specific... it's so specific in a very specific region of Honduras that it gets named. I'm like, I love that.
Has somebody gone to see if there's a Dragon Ball in Honduras?
Mm. I mean...
Ooh.
Someone should check, at least.
I mean, yes. Can't rule it out.
Mm-hmm. No one's invented the Dragon Radar yet in this timeline, so...
That's
true. We gotta take what clues we can get.
Unfortunately, we don't have a Bulma Briefs yet.
Mm-mm.
In the real world.
Pan freaks out about the fish rain while numerous townsfolk with wheelbarrows clamor over to the downpour to load up.
They're gonna go to market, but like... Everybody's here.
They are the market.
One of the townsfolk says that they should change their currency to fish, and then they'd all be millionaires.
Not how currency works.
No, man, you're so close to figuring it out.
We need to... Well...
I mean, I guess he lives in Dragon World, so he understands that his universe is controlled by numbers.
Well... So. In our efforts to revalue the fish in our economy, we've decided to lob dynamite into the lake.
Well, the financial lake. Mm-hmm. The lake of financial markets.
I assume there's a... that this is a kind of cultural difference in the translation.
Mm. Uh-huh.
In that the dub, presumably for American audiences, Pan mentions the smell, I think at least twice, and how gross it is, which is not commented on in the Japanese version, presumably made for a culture that's more used to wet markets.
That's yeah. true, yeah.
That's my reading into it.
That makes sense.
I noted
not many
that...
fishing villages in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, our the humble fishmongers of Clark County, Ohio. So we also note that the townsfolk here are all what I put down as anime Irish.
God.
Yeah. Anime
you
rednecks.
You can tell because of the sweaters.
They've got like they've all got like brown flat caps, and they all look like turn of the 20th century like dock workers.
Yeah,
They say things like "boyo."
We had Dragon World rednecks, and now we have Dragon World Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Pretty straightforward, I think.
It's like whoever just watched this episode just recently saw Snatch for the first time.
Right. So they give thanks to someone they called Princess Oto, who made the fish fall from the sky.
Hmm.
But Otohime!
Otohime! But a kid named Colum approaches and chastises the village in the dub.
This kid is so judgmental.
In the dub, Colum says, since Oto makes all the fish fall from the sky, all the fishermen have been out of work, and their kids have had to take on jobs to feed their families. But in the sub, Colum, in this instance his name is Bish, says that since the fish all fall from the sky, all the fishermen do is drink and laze around all day.
Mm-hmm.
That makes more sense, because why do the children need to feed their families? They have fish.
They have a lot of fish.
Yeah.
I mean, he ate nothing but fish all day.
Go get
mercury. But also,
poisoning.
why does this negatively affect the children at all? Like, sure, dad's drinking a little bit more, but also, like, he's not risking his life fishing either.
He's not doing deadliest catch out there for Alaskan king crab.
Yeah, he's home.
Yeah.
No, he's not home, though. He's at the bar.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, the cat is not a fan of the dad.
That kid in particular.
She wants some of the fish.
Well, that's
and you know he's drinking. You know he's drunk because his nose is red the whole episode.
He got a little rosy glow. And also him taking out a hip flask and then hurling it at Colum's face.
He does actively drink on screen.
This is effectively like Colum's dad, we find out, and he's just like, I've had enough of your back talk, and he hurls a hip flask at Colum.
Yeah.
And Goku catches it in his teeth. In his teeth.
Yeah.
Sometimes Goku is great. At least. This is great. I guess this is the opposite.
You're only allowed to beat up your children if you're training them.
Yeah.
Right.
If you think about it, this is the exact opposite of Amalfi.
Oh.
Ooh. Huh.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm.
Goku's pioneering new techniques here.
Goku chews out the dad. But he doesn't care, and eventually the scene de-escalates and the adults head off, gonna have a big fish fry. The group regroup with Colum at this abandoned sort of ark-looking boat on the top of a hill. And Colum explains that all the adults are reliant on Oto while the children have to head out to work. And, another point is that more fish fall from the sky that can be, like, handled or sold, and the rest end up rotting and polluting the village. Mm-hmm. And I believe that more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
I didn't see nearly enough stray cats in that village.
Right?
Boy.
Yeah.
My god. Also, side note here, Goku's cooking up some fish, and while he's cooking it up in the dub, he's humming some bars from Maka Fushigi Adventure, the Dragon Ball theme song, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, there's like a weird subplot where the seagulls are gone, but also like they would absolutely be having a feast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
they're hiding because
they'd be having a blast.
Colum says that something is out there hurting the seagulls, breaking their wings and stuff, so they're too afraid to fly.
Yeah,
they're all hiding
they
in this boat.
Yeah, Pan is spooked by like hundreds and hundreds of tiny anime seagull eyes.
I mean, that seems. Yeah, I would be too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's reasonable.
There's this cute bit where Goku fries up a fish in an iron pan, and then feeds Giru the pan. It's very wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
That is cute. You eat this, and I eat this.
Giru suddenly detects a Dragon Ball over the sea. Colum says, oh hey, it's Princess Oto. But instead, we look out and we see, floating over the waves, is the somber visage of a humanoid woman with turquoise skin and a Dragon Ball in her forehead. Hmm.
Dun, dun, dun.
And fish start falling from the sky again, and the townsfolk scramble for the docks. Goku confronts the village, saying, "This princess is not what she seems. She's a dangerous, evil dragon." And the villagers do not believe him, but they quickly change their tune when Oto sends a couple of the villagers flying. The villagers freak out about this and head for the hills. And we get a square off with Goku and Pan awaiting Oto. I noted that they look like a pair of, like, Team Rocket members. They're on, like, these carved out obsidian rock spires, just, like, ready to, like, say, prepare for trouble, make a double.
Oh, it's very that, yes.
Mm-hmm. And we learn...
their poses prepared.
Exactly. We learn that, that her name is Oceanus Shenron, a commander of sea and air.
Well, yeah, she says sea and air, but it's really just air.
It's just air. Just wind powers. She's Linka from Captain Planet. Wind!
Yeah. There is a little bit of fun trivia with her, in that her names, both of her names are references to mythology.
Really?
In that, yeah, Otohime is a character in Japanese mythology, and Oceanus is one of the oldest titans in Greek mythology.
Ooh, yes, cool. Yes. Oceanus is super embarrassed to reveal the wish that brought her to life. I knew it had to be somewhere, right?
Yep.
It was the very first canonical Dragon Ball wish. Oolong's wish for panties.
This is what I remember from the back from the very, very beginning of the podcast. I remember you guys saying this and be like, "Wait, what? There's some things I don't know about Dragon Ball GT." Which at that point was almost everything, but still.
Also, just want to give a quick shout out to the sub who constantly refers to the wishes and the energy feedback as minus energy. I just think it's cool.
Yeah. There is a bit where Oceanus protests having to answer the question. He's like, "Oh, yeah. I don't have to tell you." But also, like, she's right. Like, doesn't really matter.
It's not your business. Yeah, and Goku's just, like, laughing his whole ass off. Yeah. Pan and Oceanus are, like, just, like, beet red. It's like, oh, God, no.
Yeah, Goku's like, "That was a stupid wish, wasn't it?"
Maybe these dragons have a point.
So she is not happy, and she barrages our heroes with air-shattering energy balls. One of the wayward beams almost hits Column, but Pan rescues him at the last minute. Oceanus does a new attack called Mighty Hurricane Fury, summoning a mighty whirlwind around her. Goku rushes forward, but right as he reaches the threshold of the whirlwind, it seems like time, motion, wind, air, everything just stops dead in its tracks.
Whoa!
And it's spooky.
I still have no idea what happened here.
Me neither. Right.
I will never know.
Is this how hurricanes work?
Nate, sure.
I don't think so.
Cause,
why not?
Because we do find out, like, what she's doing here, and what she's doing would not cause this.
No. That not how wind work. Goku's, like, frozen in place for an unreal amount of time. Like, he looks around like, And then suddenly, out of nowhere, the winds rip to life and tear apart Goku's body, as well as his outfit.
Well,
mainly his outfit.
We are back to Saiyan Peebus.
we don't have to see it, though. We just see his little booty.
Mm-hmm.
His shiny little butt.
It's very shiny.
Pan pulls out a spare Goku gi, which she luckily had.
And she knew. She knew.
Grandpa loses his clothes sometimes. That's just how grandpas do.
He's like
just
that.
Prepare.
He's like that. What is it? That is it? Third Eye Blind, Bare Naked Ladies. Yeah, it's Ben. He's got a history of losing his shirt, is what I'm saying.
It's been 1 week since you've been naked.
And it's actually pretty funny because Oceanus is equally embarrassed by this and allows this costume change to take place.
Yeah.
Just take a break from the fight.
She's like, it's fine.
She says, I'll allow it.
Yeah. Okay, they resume fighting. Goku discovers Oceanus' secret is in the way she spins around. Because it turns out she's like spinning really, really fast in this whirlwind. And Oceanus spins around enough to reveal her true form, which is a lanky, bluish, gargoyle-like creature with the Dragon Ball stuck in her chin. Fans call this form Oceanus and the humanoid lady form Princess Oto. But I'll probably just say Oceanus. Now, is my understanding that she's spinning so fast that it creates the illusion, like the after image of a humanoid-like priestess woman? Is the idea that she's just constantly just spinning at all times, just very fast?
That is the implication?
Yeah. Just wanted to make that clear, because it's not super well shown in the drawings. Because we get some very wild shit about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "No one who sees her true face lives to tell the tale." Pan and Column get the heck out of Dodge, while Goku starts to spin around and around. And it's not super clear what is happening, but it looks like he has spun himself like a little Taz the Tasmanian Devil.
His legs have become a little tornado.
It's like a genie trail.
Yeah,
his legs like turned into a genie trail, and we're made to believe that like this is the effect of him spinning around a lot.
He saw a new move.
Yeah, exactly.
Princess Oto made the mistake of revealing that it was in fact a technique.
Shit.
So he could steal it.
Oh no!
Oto and Goku clash, sharing blow for blow with their tornado legs.
They ram into each other like a couple of Beyblades.
They let it rip!
It really did just turn into an episode of Beyblade.
And the way they show this, they're just like chest bumping over and over again. And it's very funny.
And I love that they're both really into it, too.
Mm-hmm.
They just love to let it rip, baby. Oceanus launches a massive whirlwind, and Goku is sent hurtling into a rocky cliffside. He gets drilled into the cliff. With the air pressure so high that Goku is unable to move at all. Oto continues to assault Goku with these slicing winds that drill him deeper into the cliff that are animated as these sort of cool, glowy blue Doritos that slice through the air. I like them. They look like kind of like energy glass shards.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this the same guy who can like blow up planets?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just checking.
Mm-hmm.
More powerful than Majin Buu.
More powerful than Frieza.
The wind force isn't destroying the mountain. It's just pushing him into it. But sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he can do push-ups in how many times Earth's gravity?
Mm-hmm.
Thea, you don't understand. The wind is very strong.
Oh. Yes. How foolish I am.
Consider
the wind is quite strong. Pan and Column are watching above, sort of in midair in horror. Colm has been also holding on to like this pet seagull who in the dub sub is just named Gull.
Oh my god.
I love Gull.
He's been holding Gull the whole time.
The whole episode.
Yeah.
Like a football. Yeah.
Since minute one.
Gull takes off. Gull takes flight and swoops in to attack Oto. And
From above,
and Pan sees this as the weakness because it's a tornado, and tornado tornado not strong in the middle. There's no air pressure because it's the eye of the storm.
Are those how Pokemon types work?
Yeah.
I assume that's the knowledge she's going off also.
Mm-hmm. And floats above Oceanus and unleashes a Kamehameha.
Yeah! Pan gets to do something!
Yeah!
She did a thing!
I'm so
she doesn't get damseled!
It feels like having enemies that are this like kind of lame that get taken down in one episode feels like it should be an opportunity to let, you know, the more sideline characters actually do things, but it pretty much it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But today it is.
Mm-hmm.
Today is Pan's day.
It's her first solo Kamehameha.
It's true. Yeah. In the text they say, you know, wow, I'm so proud you did your first Kamehameha.
Nice.
Which it's not the first time she's done that, but it's the first time she's done it by herself, not in a group attack.
And not as a group project, yeah.
Yeah.
So the beam blasts Odo out of her disguise, and Goku finishes the job with another Kamehameha, obliterating the dragon and giving them the Dragon Ball. However, the ball unfortunately goes flying off into the horizon, but don't worry, we'll get it back soon.
Mm-hmm.
Grandpa Goku is so proud of Pan! I'm proud of Pan.
Me
and
too.
She didn't get damseled or nothing.
Mm-mm.
It's kind of a bummer that these enemies get dispatched with so quickly. Like, they don't get any chance at, like, redemption or friendship. It's just, well, we gotta get that thing out of your head, so off to Otherworld you go.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
You gotta die.
See you in the next dimension. The townsfolk are sorry for being jerks and promise to work hard in their dangerous fishing careers from now on. And out of nowhere, the gulls return to the sky in a very Hitchcock-esque scene.
Yeah.
This is inspiring and also terrifying.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's like, it was
presented as a majestic moment, but I was just terrified personally.
Yeah.
There's so many of them.
They should have
known
the
audience. And it's all paintings, too.
Yeah.
It's all still.
It's a slideshow, which I understand, because I don't want to animate a
Right, yeah, it's like the animators came out and said...
No,
one of the animators basically came out and said, we're not animating all of these seagulls.
There's a limit.
We're not blowing our budget on...
Gulls.
On 3 seconds of gulls.
We've got to do a mole monster next week, so you get paintings.
Yeah, we got like 4 more dragons to get through. 5 more? 5 more.
Count on the fingers.
Thank you. So the gulls drop the Dragon Ball in Pan's hand and fly out into the sunset. And, oh, I love this part. As they get ready to leave, Colin calls out wanting to learn to fly like Pan. And Pan's like, yeah, come on by to Mount Pow's and I'll teach you. And I love that. I want them to go on like a flying date.
Oh, yeah.
Teach Cole martial arts.
Yes.
So he can punch the fishes out of the water like Goku.
Nice. Which I guess in this context is the equivalent of give Cole a gun.
The episode ends with the gang flying off and the silhouettes of the remaining 4 dragons overshadowing the background. And we also get a new outro.
Yeah.
Which is our very last one for GT.
Yeah.
It's called Sabitsuita Machingun de Ima wo Uchinuko, or Let's Blast Through This Moment with a Rusted Machine Gun.
Great.
You know,
okay.
I was expecting a lot more from a song with that title.
Right.
I'm gonna be honest.
Are we playing Metal Slug?
I thought the Disturbed soundtrack was the other movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
I saw that song title and I was excited.
Are you sure
the,
that song's not
change.
From Police Knots?
And also, can we just take a moment to respect, our question mark, the idea that Dragon Ball Z waited until the Boo saga to give us a new intro outro. And this show has given us 4 different credit sequences. four.
I mean, gotta keep your attention somehow.
Yeah.
Gotta keep it fresh.
You're not wrong.
Our final episode tonight is episode 52, The Seven Star Dragon.
The Japanese title roughly translates to, "Look out, Pan! Possessed by Shi Xing Long."
Okay. Thanks for that.
I guess that eventually happens.
We open up with our heroes flying through the sky when Gero detects a Dragon Ball. Blue.
Or does he? Or is he just wanting to take a nap?
Yeah, Pan mentions the last time Gero said the same thing, he just wanted to use this as an excuse to take a nap.
This
is some dub propaganda bullshit.
Well, hang on, I have to appreciate the propaganda for a moment. Because it's just like, you know, she's like, you know, you remember yesterday when you did this, and Gero says, yesterday. This is the first time Gero's hearing of this so-called yesterday. I think you made that up, Pan. What the heck happens in the dub?
Anti-Gero propaganda, and I won't stand for it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, what happens in the sub?
She is just very skeptical because there's nothing down there.
Wow.
Okay.
Maybe there was some...
Because they're in the middle of a literal desert.
Maybe there was some lip sync they really needed to make work. Or something.
I'm into that idea. Gero detects the Dragon Ball buried beneath the earth. But as Goku and Pan dig around, they don't find anything. Goku finds a little centipede. Gero suddenly feels the Dragon Ball approach as a massive earthquake shakes the land. And something appears to be burrowing at them at high speeds, singing a song.
Yeah, this is when I get very brief, fleeting Shadows of the Colossus vibes.
It's really good. In the sub, it's just like a little, like, I love earthquakes. Earthquakes are so cool. Like that. In the dub, it's set to Home, Home on the Range.
Van, do you hear singing?
If you want to call that singing.
Earthquakes roll.
The sub is actually a pun.
Okay.
Because he's saying, I'm sure of myself and I sure love earthquakes, and Jishin is the same word spoken for both, like, being sure of something and earthquake.
Cool. The creature emerges and appears to be some kind of big purple, like, mole possum.
Yeah, I like this little guy.
I love this design. I would have a plush of him if I could.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, it's that level of, like, adorably ugly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He does not seem interested in our heroes, but he does like the holes he dug.
He's proud of his work.
When they come down, Gero detects the Dragon Ball and Goku starts trying to dig it up. He tosses aside several rocks that absolutely were not drawn there before he touched them.
His new power.
Oh my god. Who did he learn that move from?
The producer who said, we don't have time to fix that.
Yeah.
Goku shouts in his ear to get his attention, and he falls over. He does not know who Goku is, but he does have the seven-star ball on his head. And he calls himself Nichiren Shenron.
Wait a minute.
What's up?
when we first met Gohan, he had the 4-star ball on his head. Mm-hmm. Is Gohan a dark dragon?
We'll see the original dark dragon.
Oh my goodness. No, he's only good energy. Mm-hmm. He's maybe, a good boy.
Maybe he was created from the energy of a bad wish, which reverberated upon and inversed on itself to create a good boy.
Made good energy of Gohan.
Something to think about.
The wish was the wish was a wish for a continuation of Dragon Ball Z called GT, and then rippled through time, and Gohan was born.
Gohan had no idea.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Put a pin on what you just said.
Oh, that's so terrifying that you just said that.
Yeah, now I'm alarmed.
Yeah, hang on. I'm gonna write X marks the Dragon Ball. Gohan is a dark dragon. We're moving that segment over from the other podcast.
More the bit about the negative energy canceling out.
Okay.
That stuff.
Oh, I see.
But yeah.
Yeah. So Nature Run doesn't really want to fight. He just wants to dig around and make earthquakes and, like, watch cities tumble.
Yeah, you know.
See, this is a prime candidate for becoming a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, right? What is wrong with Goku, honestly? Like, that didn't even hit me until just now. He's not trying to befriend any of these seemingly irredeemable monsters.
Right, this he just how murders you know, them.
Who does
right,
he think
this
he
is?
Is
how you know GT is off on the wrong track.
Yeah. Like, these are some of the most unlikely to become friends. And that's inversely proportional to how likely it is that Goku is going to befriend them.
Also, another big character point about Natron is he's pretty just slow on the uptake. Mm-hmm. He's like, what are we doing? Are we fighting? Who are you again?
I don't know.
Want to dig holes. He takes off and just starts digging at breakneck speeds. Goku doesn't want to fight anyone who doesn't want to fight back, so his plan is to insult Natron to get him mad enough to fight.
That's Goku still fighting, Goku. You're hurting him with your words.
Mm-hmm. You're punching feelings. Goku starts to just lob a bunch of insults at Natron as he's digging through the ground, but it doesn't appear to notice anything.
Well, he is just shouting at the earth.
Mm-hmm.
In the Japanese, he pulls out the old, your mother's belly button sticks out.
We don't use that for Nappa.
Shit.
He says he says that a couple times, and then he says, weird, it worked on Oob.
Yeah, I was about to say, your words are venom!
I forgot about that!
Jesus Christ.
I love Oob.
Oh, Oob.
The gang notice that Natron is headed straight for a city, so they speed off trying to cut him off at the pass. After commercial, we return to the city undergoing a massive earthquake. Pan saves an old lady from a giant globe display on a building with the phrase Tamagotchi on it.
Nice.
Goku saves a bus full of, you know, anime grade schoolers. Mm-hmm. Panda orphans.
A lot of great, like, civilian characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good Superman shenanigans happening.
A lot of that. Yeah. Like, Goku's, like, going Super Saiyan 4, and he's, like, lifting chunks of road into place, and, like, putting buildings back into place.
He doesn't need to go
like
Super
the old lady.
Saiyan 4 for that.
God, I actually yelled at my TA. Once again, this is the guy who could blow up a planet, right?
He can do that in base form.
Did you really need to go Super Saiyan 4 to lift a little bit of rubble?
He maybe just wanted to show off his pecs.
Yeah, maybe
he
just
wanted to, yeah.
Maybe it feels real good to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That dopamine.
Yeah. So Natron pops out of the ground wanting to see his handiwork, but he's super mad because there's a totally undestroyed city over there. He's like, ugh. What?
Man.
Not okay.
Nat- this makes Natron in the mood to fight. Goku ruined his beautiful rampage.
Nice.
He strikes the ground, sending Pan through a shop window. Pan emerges with a very lovely hat.
Good gag. Very good gag.
Goku lands several body blows before knocking Natron out of city limits.
Yeah. and then he compliments him on his fighting abilities.
Yeah.
Like, all he did was take a bunch of punches from you, Goku. What?
Perfect attack.
Not everybody can do that.
That's true.
His technique is flawless.
Flawless.
It's like, you're pretty good when you get riled up. But he didn't do anything, Goku.
Mm-hmm. Is this when he makes attacks explode out of the ground?
Shortly after.
Yeah. When that happened, I was like, oh, wow. That's the oldest trick in the book. And it was from under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Vegeta would never have fallen for that in a million
beam
years.
The ground trick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vegeta would never have fallen for that.
Natron reveals the wish that had summoned him to life. It was the wish from the Buu saga that revived all those killed during Majin Vegeta's rampage at the World Martial Arts Tournament.
And it's at this point I realize, oh yeah, 90% of these dragons are just going to be like, yeah, I'm a result of people coming back to life.
Yeah. Like, they thought of this idea that's like, oh, the using the Dragon Balls has consequences. And then that's where they stopped thinking. Because it would have been like, well, I mean, actually, this all means exactly the same thing every time.
It's almost always the same fucking wish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was summoned to bring back the lives of several hundred who were killed during the rampage of a great evil. Know the other one. Know the other one. Not too far. No, go back. Natron has his own special move called the Aftershock Technique, where he puts his paws to the ground and a massive burst of energy erupts from below. He assaults them with a barrage of these aftershocks, but the two dodge him effortlessly. They do this Looney Tunes-ass sketch where they, like, pop up on Natron's head and cause him to aftershock himself.
Yeah.
Natron collapses, and in a puff of purple smoke, the Seven Star flies out to Pan. Yay! That was it!
Yay, we did it!
Easy. Easy peasy.
But episode title lied to us again.
Mm-hmm.
It... Go on.
However, the cracks on the Dragon Ball do not recede. And in fact, the ball flashes blue and swells into a massive energy orb that absorbs Pan. Ah!
Oh, what? No!
Oh, no.
Pan does not appear to have a good time here as she starts to deform and morph into a monstrous creature. Mm. And when the light fades, standing tall is what the subtitles call Super Natron Shenron, who is now a big blue mole with, like, webbed fins on the side of his face.
Oh.
See, this looks more like a dragon than Rage Shenron to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most dragon-y so far.
Yeah, I agree with that as well.
It turns out that him being, like, slow on the uptake and naive was just an act the whole time.
It was a ruse.
You fell for it.
Fooled you.
He used a mole as his first body, and the mole, the normal earth mole, is now just lying dead.
He's just sleeping.
Preferably not. Preferably just tuckered out.
Yeah,
we don't
that's
have to,
true.
We don't want to have to use the Dragon Balls to bring the mole back and then just
who knows
more problems.
Cause.
We'll just start this whole mess all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, I can easily see that happening.
And Ginyu style, Natron has body swapped over to Pan, so this is effectively Pan's body?
We did this already! This is just baby again!
But it looks like a mole crossed with a Vaporeon.
So it's different.
So were the other dragons using host bodies as well?
I don't
assume not.
Like, did Haze Shinran fuse with a frog? And Raid Shinran fuse with some goo?
I think this is just this Shinran's thing. I think this is just
that's okay. Just this one's power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought his thing was earthquakes.
You can have more than one thing.
That's true.
You're allowed.
He was only digging because he was a mole.
Mm-hmm. Dragons contain multitudes.
Yeah. Now that exactly. He's got Pan, in theory, now he'll just complain about Giru and get captured.
I was trying to build towards the same joke, Matt, and then you just annihilated it. I'm so glad I didn't try to do it, because it would never have been that good in a million years. Oh my god. I think it's very funny that this really surprised me. Like, mm-hmm. I was shocked when the Dragon Ball didn't fix itself.
There's a phase two to this boss?
Like, does that count as clever storytelling when you set the bar so low that when something interesting happens, it's more surprising?
That is, look, for real, this is one of the, like, main benefits of a Monster of the Week format. Because when you get to the end of the episode and you don't get the resolution, that's like a really cheap and easy way to get a shock.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, it's going to be a two-parter. That means
you didn't give me the chicken nugget after the boss fight. Now we have to wait.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew Hussey at one point basically like defined storytelling and as like establishing a baseline and then deviating from it. To signal mm-hmm. to the audience that something important is happening. And,
Natron wants to trade up and steal Goku's body next, preferably in Super Saiyan 4 form.
Again, it's just baby.
Yep.
But can he do that? Because is Super Saiyan 4 a thing of the body, or is it a martial arts technique?
It would be funny if he was just straight up wrong. If he didn't have any fucking idea how it worked.
That's my theory.
Yeah.
These dragons have a very one-track mind.
We've kind of established they also think they're smarter than they are.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
And we end tonight's episode with Goku hearing Pan cry out for help from within, and Goku rushing into action. Do we have any final thoughts for episode 52 or any of tonight's episodes?
What was the little blob boy's name again? Cole?
Colum?
Do you think he's
Beesh?
Do you think he's Goku Jr.'s grandpa?
Ooh.
Ooh.
I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you think he makes that trip to Mount Paizo and
Yeah, I want them to have a flying date.
I think he has like a pet seagull that he takes with him?
And the seagull and Giru have a little romance.
I'm not opposed to it, I just wasn't ready for it.
The seagull brings Giru like pieces of metal litter from the ocean.
Trash.
Nice. Oh, thank God.
My true love.
God bless.
Wally too.
This is the adventure we deserve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the true grand tour. the real good time.
How about I give you another adventure you deserve?
Oh, yes, please, Jason.
Before we get into the reading, I do want to take a little trip into hell with a segment I've been calling Devil King Diaries, which is what's going on with Piccolo in hell? Because he's in hell forever now.
Yeah.
And we also established that Krillin got bored waiting around to be resurrected and went to hell to like be his sidekick.
Yeah.
So what are we gonna have him do?
What are they doing? Does Piccolo want to find people to fight? Does he want to get stronger?
He definitely wants to get stronger.
Piccolo, like Goku, cares about getting stronger. Like from a purely philosophical perspective. Like, it's a self-improvement thing to him, I think.
which is what distinguishes them from Vegeta, I think.
Mm-hmm. Can we have Piccolo confront his, I don't know what to call it, his father, King Piccolo?
He would be here in hell.
He's not one of the ones that came out for the Super 17 arc.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
But he had better things to do.
Like, I don't know original Dragon Ball things, so like, help me fill in the blanks, Matt, if you could. So King Piccolo is the bad guy, mm-hmm. the final ish bad guy from original Dragon Ball. He gets the classic Son Goku headbutt. He spits out a egg.
Yeah.
The egg is Piccolo that we know and love.
Yes.
Piccolo Dad, Piccolo Senior, what happens to him and his body? Does he die and go to hell?
I feel like yes, but they don't. That's one of the strings that's left like really, really open.
Okay.
That's where we live in these segments.
We live in a very stringy area.
Mm-hmm. I want to revisit that. What's it gonna be like, you know, catching up with dear old dad?
Is he also meditating in a waterfall?
He has to be.
waterfall of lava.
Yeah. And I feel like his MMO. His MO.
Is he a Final Fantasy 14?
He's playing some Warcraft.
He's doing Guild Wars.
Is it Warcraft or is he a Final Fantasy 14 guy, you think?
his MO
I play Toontown Online.
He wants to be a ruler of some sort. So I feel like he found some sort of like corner of hell and is like a hell boss.
Mm-hmm. He's his mooks are causing trouble.
Yeah, maybe that's how they first hear about it.
Drum and tambourine and piano are all doing shit.
I feel like this could totally be like some sort of like RPG style adventure where Piccolo Jr. has to go to hell and confront his dead father, who was like a hell king.
Well, maybe, I love a good hell king.
Maybe they initially start because these guys are causing problems and like destabilizing hell, which is something Piccolo is, you know, kind of sensitive about after his recent well-intentioned extremist temper tantrum that caused damage to the afterlife. And so he sets off being like, all right, we got to put a stop to this. But Krillin...
And there's also the aspect that Kami is also in him, so it's also his brother/self. And just...
Right, yeah.
There's layers to this.
Yeah, but when they find out that it's the Demon King, Piccolo Sr., and at that point, it's Krillin who's like, oh, this guy created you. This guy's like your dad, right? Well, you gotta go meet him. And Piccolo brushes it off like, no, it's not like that. I owe nothing to him. I am my own creator. But
I am, but yeah.
Krillin knows what's going on in his buddy's head.
And we find out in Super that Krillin does actually still have some like unresolved issues with when he was killed by Symbol, I think it was.
Oh yeah, you mentioned that previously, yeah.
Yeah, one of King Piccolo's henchmen or something.
Yeah.
Trauma.
So there's another thread we can play with.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I want Krillin to face his fears and then Destructo Disc his fears.
Yeah.
All right, let's leave them at the castle doors and finish off tonight with a 4-star reading. What we'd like to do at the end of each episode is take various Dragon Ball characters and divining from their manga or anime debut date, a birthday, and a horoscope, and we read that horoscope to them, about them, hopefully with some interesting information.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to read up on a character who does not get his own wiki page, but just kind of gets shoved into the additional characters page.
Oh.
I want to talk about Colum, because I don't think we see him again.
Mm.
He just seems cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us a sequel hook. Colum has an anime debut date of July 2nd, 1997. That would make him a Cancer.
He's almost my birthday buddy.
Aww.
So aww. Yeah.
Birthday buddies. All right, Column, or Bish, if you're listening to the sub. This is your reading. A group gathering you attend today could have long-term beneficial effects. Perhaps you will strike up a conversation with a stranger who turns out to be an expert in something you're interested in. Or you may deepen a relationship with a casual acquaintance who ends up being a friend for life. Keep your heart open to whatever and whomever this day brings.
Oh, that's amazing. So beautiful.
That's got to be one of the most blatant ones you've done so far.
The stars do not lie.
And that is a high bar, Matt. I agree with you.
I don't say that lightly.
Right. Oh, God.
You literally just described the episode from his perspective.
I think the last one it was that intense, at least that I was present for, was the cell one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. God bless.
Bless the stars, and bless you, listeners. Thank you all for tuning in each week. I really appreciate it. If you'd like to get a hold of us and send some of that poetry, you can reach us at destructodiscourse@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us with at @destructo_disc, DISC. And if you go to the very top of the Twitter page, you'll see our pinned tweet, which is an invite to our fan Discord page, the Destructo Discourse Discord, where you can hang out with us and see when some of us are streaming games and share various fan theories. There's all kinds of fun. Now, Dave, whereabouts could we find you on the internet?
Nope, I am Scythe, PSYTHE, at Archive of Our Own. I write fanfiction, rarely.
And Matt?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Twitch and all those different places under the username DefineProgue, where I'll be doing my VTuber thing.
Yeah! Melissa, how about you?
Kristaya Kara, STAI, blah, 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 blah. If you weren't on my Discord to hear me scream about it, Adult Swim released a clip from upcoming show Bird Girl.
That
I have been assistant animation director on for the past year and a half, and it's my favorite show I've ever worked on, and it premieres
mentioned previously
April 4th.
On this show.
Yes, previously when I had no idea when it was airing. April 4th at midnight.
April 4th.
Please watch it, and please tell Adult Swim on Twitter that you love it so listen that I can keep having a job.
Listen to Melissa's cat. Watch Bird Girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now! Thea, how about yourself?
I don't do much on the internet, but sometimes I jump in on your streams, Jason.
And play Valheim with me.
Yeah.
I stream on twitch.tv as JCavs, JAYCALVES. And usually I play, well, lately it's been Valheim, but, you know, just all kinds of things. I'm usually streaming on Wednesday nights, but you can just find me whenever I'm online, you know, whenever I get the chance. JCavs also takes you to any of my socials, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, but I'm not super, active on those. Wherever you get this podcast, I would be so humbled and delighted if you could leave a rating and a review, but specifically a 4-star review for the Gohan. We have not met the Gohan Shenron, but but still we demand you give us the Gohan.
Mm-hmm. Just don't make a wish on it.
Please, anything. They can't take any more.
Do not wish, please. Only review.
Please stop praying for my grandpa.
He's becoming too powerful. Please stop praying for Gohan. He's become too strong.
This has been Destructo Discourse, and we're having a good time.
Don't you see that he don't